Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities. From the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front room. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month. A savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
Hello. This is War Air Boswell, and this is another episode of The Measurables, powered by Revolt. Today we have a good friend of the show, a friend of mine and yours. There are people that you see around town and people that you see at very important events. And you may ask yourself, who is that guy? Who is that gal? Who are they? This is one of those individuals. He's a gentleman who's been doing jewelry for many years, incredible pieces, Super Bowl rings, NBA rings. As a matter of fact, he most recently did the championship rings for the Golden State Warriors. A friend to the program, Mr. Jason Arashibin.
Thank you. Thank you, Warrior, for having me. I'm excited to be on, especially, you know, we've known each other so long. It's amazing and an honor to be able to sit over here with you and talk.
Yes, yes. So before we get into anything, I always ask people, whenever they come on the podcast, how do you feel? How's your mental right now?
I'm feeling honestly blessed and happy. I'm in a good space right now. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling motivated. If I wake up in the morning and I have a smile on my face and I'm motivated for the day, I know that I'm in a good space. So I'm feeling good.
Absolutely. So you've been in business. I mean, I've been in business 20 years.
Me too. Same thing.
Yeah. So, you know, we're all humans, so we're all perfectly imperfect, right? Mm-hmm. When you find yourself facing adversity, what are the things that you do to really, like, you know, level set yourself and break free of, like, whatever? Because and before you answer, the reason why I say that is because I used to say I'm having a bad day. But you're never having a bad day. You're having a bad moment within a day. So that being said, how do you level set yourself?
Well, I do three things, right? I look in the mirror and I talk to myself and I say, this too shall pass. Because no matter what you go through in life, like you said, it's just one episode of a long season.
Right.
And this too shall pass. Mm-hmm. I also have the undying belief that I will never lose. And I have confidence in myself that although this too shall pass, I shall conquer this very moment. And mm-hmm. I feel confident that I'm able to do that. And I know that I will. And then the third trick, which is something my father used to tell me when I was a kid and I was real emotional and I was upset because I wasn't invited to a party or I was, you know, whatever the kids go through. My father used to sit down and say, okay, now I want you to look at this adversity you're facing and I want you to visualize the worst case scenario of this. Like, what is the worst thing that can happen? Right. And then I want you to visualize yourself overcoming that worst case scenario.
Right.
Because it can never, you know, no matter what obstacle you face in life, whether it be in a relationship, whether it be in business, you know, oh, I didn't get a big deal, or I lost a big deal, or my marriage didn't work out, or my friendship didn't work out, or somebody stabbed me in the back and mm-hmm. that I trusted. And you think and you say, okay, well, like, what's the worst thing that can happen?
Wow.
And no matter what in my business, I always, you know, you always get down when I love what I do so much. I'm so passionate about what I do. So when I get those obstacles and I have those moments of defeat, which we all will have, I sit back and I think, I said, what's the worst thing that can happen? The worst thing is in my business, I go bankrupt. I lose everything. You take all the money and all the property and all the business I ever have. But guess what? I have a reputation.
Mm-hmm.
I have a strong will.
Right.
And I have relationships. And no matter how bad it gets, I'll build right back up. So I those are the three things I kind of go through every single time I face an obstacle. And I think one of the three or all three of them always help me get through it.
Wow. That is a embarrassment of blessings of an answer. That's amazing, bro. Key phrase in that was, even if I go all the way down, I'm going to build back up. That's amazing. So speaking of that, like we all have points of origin. Where are you from originally?
Well, I grew up in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. I was born in Iran. Mm-hmm. My parents, I'm a son of two immigrant parents. My father's from Iran. My mother's from Norway.
Mm-hmm.
My mother's European, blonde hair, blue eyed. My dad is dark and hairy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we left Iran during the revolution. I was only three. We moved to the United States. I do not come from a lot of money. We came over here in search for a better
life,
a better life, like every immigrant that comes.
Yeah.
And, you know, we my father built up and built a small little business for himself that eventually went into real estate. And then I lived in Northridge, then went to high school in Calabasas, and then ended up going to UCLA.
Yeah. And at what point did you say, jewelry is what I want to do? Because it sounds like your father was many things, philosopher being one. Mm-hmm. But how did you find yourself doing jewelry? How did you find yourself in a jewelry space?
So what's funny is that I never would have ever guessed I would be in the jewelry business. And I would never even dream that I would be in a business such as jewelry. And when I was I was always great at school. So mm-hmm. my father says, well, you know, listen, my son is good at school. So he's either going to be an attorney, he's going to be a doctor, he's going to be an engineer, he's going to be one of these, like, these professions that are
the top five professions,
highly regarded professions. So when I was a sophomore at UCLA, I was $28,000 in debt and had to figure out a way to get out of it.
Right.
So as a result, I ended up going to the wholesale district downtown with a girl that I was dating at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that there was an area where you could buy plastic hair clips and silver trinkets by the dozen. And I was like, there's an idea here. Let me see. I'm on a campus with 2,500 students minimum. I have more than 2,500. Shit, I think it's like 20,000. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
20,000
yeah.
students, all of which most of which come from families that have money because they have to be able to afford a university such as that. And half of them are girls. So now you got 10,000 girls, and I was like, I can sell this stuff to the girls on campus. So I went and I made a deal with UCLA. I went to the administration. I said, listen, I want you to harness and encourage my entrepreneurial spirit, and I want to set up a 6-foot table on campus, and I want to be able to sell to the girls on campus. They said no.
Hair clips,
and like little silver, $10.
Little doodads.
Yeah, little doodads, exactly. So they said no at first. Well, I don't take no for an answer ever.
Right.
So I came back and I came back and I was persistent. And then eventually they were so sick of hearing from me that they said, you know what? Make it worthwhile for us. I said, no problem. I'm gonna give 20% back to the school. I want you to let me set up a 6-foot table. I just want to do it for one quarter and that's it. They said, you know what? You have it. So I got it. I took $400, which I really didn't have, and bought by the dozen this stuff from a nice Korean lady in downtown Los Angeles mm-hmm. on Maple Street. And I set up my 6-foot table, and I sold $800 that day.
That day. But now hold on one second, because UCLA is such a humongous campus. Where were you in the Commons?
I was in the North Campus.
Okay.
I was in North Campus. And I set up and I sold $800 that day. And I said to myself, listen, this $800, it cost me about $150 a product I sold. My cost. So that means $650. You take out the 20%, that's $160. So I'm still netting close to $500, a little under $500 that day.
For one day's work.
For one day's work. And what's better than that? I'm literally sitting there flirting with girls all day. I'm selling right. and I'm making money. There was nothing better than that. So that quickly turned into a business.
5 days a week? 7 days a week.
5 days a week I was doing it. I eventually had North and South Campus. By the time I was a senior.
Franchised.
Yes. By the time I was a senior, I had 6 college campuses going at the same time.
All UCs?
Cal State LA, UC Santa Barbara, UCLA, USC, Cal State Northridge.
You were on CSUN's campus?
Yeah,
I went to CSUN.
Yeah, I was on CSUN's campus. I would have students working for me getting paid commission.
But how... Earmark what you're about to say for a second, because it's a lot to unpack here.
Mm-hmm.
How does one find you to know that this is a that this is an opportunity that I could franchise? How are people explain this to me?
Well, I just replicated what worked. Once I had a proven model at UCLA, I went to Cal State. Getting a referral to UCSB was very easy because it was within the
right.
UC the family, but I went to Cal State LA and I said, listen, I have a proven model. UCLA is making X amount of dollars. They're encouraging students. I'm providing jobs for students on campus. And I think this is an excellent opportunity for you to give jobs to students on campus
yeah.
and make money. And this is a win-win, and you provide an added attraction on campus for the students.
Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah.
Or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again, because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front row. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.
They love the idea. We went ahead and did it. It was wildly successful. And at that point, I said, okay, I need to scale this business.
At State Farm, we're committed to uplifting Black futures. In collaboration with organizations like 100 Black Men and National Urban League, State Farm provides high school students with the opportunity to learn and apply best practice strategies for saving and investing, all while offering academic support, life skills, and exposure to college access programs to prepare these students for life after high school. Check out 100blackmen.org and nul.org to donate and learn more. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Right. And so I was always a gifted drawer. Mm-hmm. My mother wanted me to go to art school. My father didn't because he said there's no money there. So he wanted me to have a real profession. But I was able to utilize my creativity at this point. What I did was I would draw ideas or designs, and then I would have them made in China. And I was like making enough money at the time that I would have my own original designs. I'm talking about things that cost me $1 each, $2 mm-hmm. each.
Right.
And I saw the girls on campus were flocking to it, and they liked it. So I said, I'm going to take this a step further. I'm going to set up an acrylic display with about 15 to 20 items in it. And I'm going to drive down and go to every nail salon, every hair salon. And I would tell them, I'm going to leave it on your desktop, on your countertop. Where you check out at.
Yeah.
You don't have to give me any money, but I'm going to come back in 2 weeks. We're going to check what you sold, and you're going to cut me a check, and I'll replenish your inventory. Well, I started it on Ventura Boulevard all the way at Calabasas and moved my way all the way to Universal City.
Wow.
Then I went to Newport Beach. Then I went to San Diego. Then I had 400 nail and hair salons selling my stuff on their counter, and at that point, I was getting ready to graduate from UCLA. My father wanted me to go to law school. I said, you know what? I'm making, back then, $200,000 a year as a college student. That's equivalent to maybe $500,000, half a million dollars today.
That's amazing. Now, were you on scholarship or was your family paying for you to go to UCLA?
No, I was getting, they were paying for me to go to UCLA. I ended up having to pay for it because my father did a deal with me. I had to pay for it.
Right.
And I had big spending habits. So that's why I was $28,000 in debt. I was going out every night.
Right.
So anyways, I at that point decided that I was not going to go to law school. My father was absolutely devastated. My mother was devastated. Wow. My father told me that the business I'm in is a nomadic business, not a real career. It's, you know, you're just, he equated it to just being just a sleazy little peddler of cheap stuff. And he said it's not a real profession. So he didn't, him and I didn't talk for 2 years because of this.
Are you serious?
He was that disappointed in me.
So holidays, birthdays, you go, I mean, is he like, you're not my son whenever you see you?
I would see my mother and we would just ignore each other. And because he was disappointed in me, he thought I was throwing my life away. At that point, I was making good money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what does a 22-year-old do when they're making that much money? Well, they spend it.
They go hard.
And that's what I did. So I was doing what no mother or father want their child to do. I was partying my face off.
Right.
I was out and about every single night. I was at the clubs every single night. If I made $20,000 that month, I spent $20,000 that month. Jeez. And now you might look at it and say, that's stupid. My mother looked at it and said, you're an idiot. Wow. I would probably look at my own son and say, that's stupid.
Right.
Well, let me tell you what I was doing. I was doing the best self-promotion and marketing of myself that I could have ever done without even knowing it.
Wow.
I went out every night and I started building relationships. Why? Because I'm accepted as an equal to other wealthy people. I'm sitting next to professional basketball players. I'm sitting next to celebrities, and I'm getting tables right next to them. But I wasn't able to capitalize on any of these relationships.
And why? Because you didn't have anything?
I didn't have it. They're not. Were they going to buy a plastic hair clip for $15? Right. But what I did see is I recognized an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I would see. I never forget. I was sitting at a table and I would see. I saw Quentin Richardson and Darius Miles, and it was the Clipper team at the time, and all of them were in these big jewelry. I'm like, I got to figure out how to make that. Like, how do I do that? How do I sell them that? I'm friends with them. I'm cool with them. They know me because they see me all the time. How do I provide a service? I see an opportunity. How do I provide a service?
Okay.
So I said, I'm gonna figure out how to be in this jewelry business. So I was a gifted drawer, like I said, and I would see these athletes wearing these big medallions, and I would sit down at home and I would draw stuff. And I would go, and I'm, like I said, I'm very persistent. So I would be tapping them on the shoulder. Hey, you know, I'm Jason. You see me all the time. Da, da, da. I want to design your next chain. I got told no hundreds of times.
And that's the story of the entrepreneur.
Absolutely. And you never take no for an answer. You keep trying. You keep plugging away.
Correct.
Then one day, a basketball player by the name of Anthony Mason says to me, you know what? You've asked me three times. Come to my hotel tomorrow. We're playing the Lakers, but you can come before shoot around. Come to the Ritz-Carlton Marina Del Rey and bring all your jewelry. I said, okay, sounds good. I'll be there. I immediately left the club thinking to myself, what jewelry am I going to bring considering the fact that I'm not even in the diamond business, nor do I really know anything about it?
Wow.
So what did I do? I started taking out magazine clippings. I went online and saw what pictures I could find online. I would cut it out. I would literally put it on almost like on construction paper, like I was like a third grader doing an art project. And I made a makeshift catalog. I head over to the Ritz-Carlton. He said, "Where's your jewelry?" I said, "I don't carry jewelry. I don't carry jewelry. I'm a bespoke jeweler. Everything's made to order."
Look, that's a bar right there.
Yeah, right.
Wow, on the spot.
Yeah. So he looked and he said, "How much is that bracelet?" I threw a number out, not even knowing. Right. I just said $40,000, and he's like, "Sounds good. What do you need from me?" I said, "I need a $20,000 check, and I'm gonna get started." He gave me $20,000 check, and I was at that very moment, I was in the jewelry business.
Just like that.
I had to figure out how I was going to get it made. I went downtown to the jewelry district. I started asking around, started asking questions. I had someone who ripped me off completely to make the first one for me.
Absolutely.
I made a couple thousand dollars, almost nothing, but I understood how to. I had a stepping stone. I had a starting point. And from that point on, I just built my business one client at a time. And, you know, like you said, you saw me out all the time.
I kept plugging away.
And then as that business grew, I downsized and basically went extinct my other business, the low-end stuff, because I knew that there was much more scalability. There was much more room for growth in the high end. Yeah.
So it's interesting that you say what you just said. One of my vendors, we were having a conversation, and he does all of my leather goods. He said, Boz, what I want you to understand is, you know, you can have mid-price goods, but in terms of managing overhead and knowing where your money is going to come from, the higher the price point, you know specifically how much you're going to get because you're not making a ton of it. So if you make a couple of pieces and they sell, I mean, like, you know, like there are breadcrumbs that you can follow versus just like making something for $5 and making 1,000 of them and none of them sell. So it's very interesting that you say what you just said. So in your answer to me, you really answered my next question, which was, how was your family instrumental in the growth of your business? And would you say that they were instrumental because they looked at it as a, well, actually, you touched on two things. When you were selling the hair clips, that's what your father was upset about. That's mm-hmm. what your mother was upset mm-hmm. about.
It wasn't a career.
Yes. So when you get into the ice business, the diamond business, do opinions change from your family or is it still the same?
It definitely changed.
Why?
Because the perception of it being high end, the perception of it being prestigious, luxurious, right. I think changed it.
Right.
Now, with my own children, I would say that if whether they were selling clothes hangers or they were selling high end jewelry, as long as it's a business they enjoy,
you're going to let them do it.
And I'm going to let them do it because if they enjoy it, they're going to be successful. Mm-hmm. But my parents were very instrumental in allowing me and prepping me to be what I am today. They taught me the lesson of hard work
mm-hmm.
because they came here with nothing and without barely speaking English, even to this day, and they were able to survive and make it.
Wow.
They taught me to treat people with respect mm-hmm. and you treat the busboy the same way you would treat the CEO of a Fortune 500 company.
Correct.
And that ability to give everyone the same level of respect is what was one of the building blocks of my business because it helped me and allowed me to build relationships, network properly. Because a lot of my clients, you'd be surprised, people are like, oh God, you got to hang around. You know, I got some of my biggest clients from people you would never guess. Their barber, their security, because I give everyone the same
right.
respect.
Right.
I didn't build this business on my own. I worked hard. But I had a lot of people that helped me that they took to me as a person, as Jason, that said, listen, I'm going to, you know, some of them you know, right?
Right.
Like Hits, like Biz Markie.
Wow. Biz
Markie is actually he was the third client I ever had. He started bringing me people in the music business and started really, because he actually saw my drive. He saw that I was genuinely a good person, that he wanted to help me. And when you have people that are willing to help because they actually genuinely like you and want to see you succeed and you surround yourself with good people, you're going to have great results. And because wow. of those lessons my parents taught me, I was able to create.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at selectquote.com/commercials.
Meaningful relationships that wanted to see me win. And that's very rare in this day and age.
That's amazing. So you mentioned the way that you built your clientele was literally by just being a good human being,
mm-hmm.
pretty much. But in reference to your business specifically, because the barrier to entry, I feel, is lower now for a lot of things because we got the internet.
Absolutely. The internet's created a huge barrier to entry in almost every field.
Right. So it's like everybody, like if you got a good friend and, you know, your friend wants X and you are his sidekick and you create it, then whatever you created, you're instantly, that's what you are. Yep. Like, oh, so I'm a designer now.
Yeah.
I'm a jeweler now.
Yeah.
It's the barrier to entry is very low. So my question to you is, what do you see as your primary, what do you see as your value proposition? And to see if people who do what you do, what is your value proposition?
I've been there, done that. I'm tried and tested. And
Could you delve deeper into that?
Yes. I think that with the advent of social media, you're absolutely right. In your business and mine alike, right? You know, if people are saying, oh, well, you know, I'm a jeweler because you sold one piece and this celebrity shouted you out. Now you have tons of Instagram followers. No, you're not. You don't understand. It's the know-how. It's the understanding of having done it. It's the mistakes that I had to go through to be good at my particular craft.
Right.
I went through all of these mistakes. Mm-hmm. I've made the mistakes. I understand what works and what doesn't work. I'm tried and tested. And I've been around. And I think a lot of these people that come and go, and you've seen it in your business, mm-hmm. there's so many jewelers that have come and go throughout the course of my 20 years.
Right.
You see them and then you don't see them anymore.
Right.
And there's a reason for that.
Yes.
And so I think that that's what's contributed to my longevity is that I do good business. Word of mouth is very powerful. I make sure that no one leaves with a bad experience. Inevitably, you're going to have that, but I try to minimize that even if it's at my own detriment.
Wow. Well, actually, it's never to your own detriment if you're telling the truth, because the truth you don't have to remember ever.
This is true.
Lies you have to remember.
This is true.
So even if you lose out on something because you told the truth, that'll come back to you tenfold.
This is true.
It really will.
This is true.
So in reference to just... I remember my first sale, and you just laid yours out. I remember I got my first sale, and it was like, you know, it was with, what was the gentleman's name? His name was John Sally.
Mm-hmm. I know John.
And he was like, you know, he had just come to L.A. from, I believe, Chicago. He won a couple more championships. And then I started doing stuff for Steve Smith, Tyson Chandler, and just that's on the basketball side. But I was already doing stuff for guys at UTA, William Morris, you know, industry entertainment, all those places, right? So I remember the first big check I got, like substantial check. It was like, I believe it was like $279,000. And I was like, this is incredible. This is all mine. No, it's not.
You got to pay vendors.
You got to pay vendors. You have to pay taxes. You need to take a portion of that money, save that money. But you also had to put money back into your business, back into your experience, right? So I had a tax person who really, really fed me some good game, because I got to a point where I was just like, you know what? Where are you at this weekend? Oh, you're in Japan? I'll meet you there. Where are you at? Stockholm. I'll meet you there. And like my financial advisor said, you know what? It's cool that you're traveling, because through travel, you learn more about the world and the world learns more about you. But you need to put money back into your business. Did you ever, in the cultivation of your business, have like a game plan when you started, like once you sold that first chain and you got ripped off, like how did you start to build out the infrastructure around your business so you weren't like out here in the cold?
Well, I always try to look I'm not the type of person that can look 30 years ahead. I'm not going to look even 10 years ahead, but I'm definitely the type of person that likes to look 5 years ahead. That's always been my thing, right? Right. I always do a 5-year increments, because I feel like so much can change. Like to predict 10 or 20, like we don't, if we knew social media was coming, we would have changed the way we do business.
Correct.
20 years ago, right?
Correct.
So we don't know how our environment's going to change. But with a 5-year increment, I think it's a pretty safe bet. So what I do, I always write what I want to do, where I want to be in 5 years from now. And every single year I write it again, and I revise my 5-year.
Incredible.
And I do that. And that's where, so at least I have a destination. I don't like looking in the rearview mirror. I want to look forward.
Right.
So, and I have to have a destination. I have to have a goal. I'm very goal oriented.
Every year.
So that is what I try to do, because when you're running a business, you tend to not see the forest through the trees, because
Correct.
You're micromanaging so many different things that are happening at the same time. sometimes you have to take a step back and look at your business from a macro level. That is why for me in business, incredible. I really, really enjoy asking others that are not in my business, that know me, that have been around me, or just are looking at my business from a bird's eye view, from the outside looking in, people like yourself. Mm-hmm. And I ask, what can I do better?
Wow.
And a lot of people are afraid of asking that question because it's like, it's almost like you're admitting that you're not good. I'm okay admitting I can sit here and look you dead in the eye and say, there's a lot of things you're 10 times better than me at.
Right.
But I want to know those things. I want to learn those things so I can be as astute and as knowledgeable as you are in those fields. You might see something in my business that I'm unable to see because I have the blinders of being stuck in the middle of it every single day.
Right.
So I'm a big proponent of asking others how you can do your job better. Even it goes all the way down to my employees. I ask them at the end of the year, every year I give my employees a review. Mm-hmm. At the end of that review, I want them to give me a review.
Wow.
I prep them. I say, when I'm going to give you a review, at the end of the review, I'm expecting you to give me one, and I want it to be blunt, honest, and you will not get fired no matter what you say.
Have you ever fired somebody?
I've fired people, but not because of their review.
Never?
Never.
Never held a grudge against them?
I've gone, I'm not going to lie, man. I've gone home where I was like, man, I can't believe he
right,
said that.
Right.
Like, how dare he? But you know what? Sometimes you have to look, you need that hard truth.
That check.
Listen, at the end of the day, I might not agree with everything that they're saying, but I always try to be as honest with myself as possible and look myself in the eye and say, is it a possibility that they are actually right?
Right.
And can I take their criticism or their suggestion and be better at my craft or better as a person, a better version of Jason?
Yes. So there was, I believe it was the last ring that Kobe won when Ron Artest hit the three-pointer. You were at that game, naturally.
Yes.
I saw you at that game. But my seats and your seats were very different. Can you tell me how you got the introduction into the possibility of doing the championship rings for the NBA? How did that whole thing come together?
Remember when I said earlier in this conversation, the power of
relationships?
Relationships.
Yes.
Everything is a relationship.
Everything.
Right? So, like, I can go, everything, I can go trace every relationship back to like 30 people, right? Who connected me to who, and I maintain those relationships. And, you know, if I want to look back at how I got the Lakers was.
When something happens to your kitchen, you might say,
this is ludicrous.
But that won't fix your home. That will only get you the rapper Ludacris.
Having trouble? Don't panic. Don't be alarmed. You need to file a claim? Holla at State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. You can file a claim on the app or call us.
Thanks, Mr. Chris.
No matter how ludicrous the situation, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
I met Rich Paul. Mm-hmm. Who introduced me to Maverick Carter, LeBron James, who handles LeBron James's, you know, his business.
Yes.
Maverick Carter took me to, introduced me to Roy Williams, who was playing football at the Dallas Cowboys at the time. Roy Williams invited me to a game and introduced me to a gentleman named Gary Zelman, who was a floor seat holder at the Laker game. Gary Zelman introduced me to Jesse Buss, who's the son of the late Dr. Jerry Buss.
The younger one or the older
the
one?
The youngest one.
Okay.
He's the assistant general manager right now.
Mm-hmm.
And
for the G League team, right?
No, that's Joey. Jesse's the assistant general manager of the actual team, the Lakers.
Okay.
So became good friends with him, started hanging out with him the whole time. Then in 2009, the Lakers won the championship against the Orlando Magic. And I said, listen, I'd like to throw my name in the hat, in the race. And he says, okay, no problem. Let me go talk to my dad. So he told his dad, he's like, listen, I want Jason to get a shot. I had no business doing this deal.
Stop right there, please. Because when you think of, you know, these NBA rings, I'm thinking that Tiffany's is making them.
Tiffany's the big one.
Like, I'm just thinking, like, these are the people. But the thing is, it all starts with the intestinal fortitude of just asking. My mom used to always say, you have not because you ask not.
Yeah.
And if you just ask, you'd be surprised the doors that will open for you. This is a prime example. Please continue.
Yeah, you don't get what you don't ask for. I tell my kids all the time, the squeaky wheel gets oil. Like, you need, if you're not going to open your mouth, you're not going
to
get it.
Yep, the person next to you will get it.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at selectquote.com/commercials.
Right next to you.
Absolutely. So I said I would like to get the opportunity to make the championship rings. Knowing full well I did not have the infrastructure to handle that kind of project, I didn't have the know-how, to be quite honest with you, to be able to handle a project of that magnitude. You got to remember, it's not 12 rings. This is like a 700 to 800 ring program that you have to finish in 3 months. Designed to production.
700 rings?
That's correct, because you buy for the employees, they buy for sponsors. It's a big project.
Serious? Wow, okay.
So Dr. Buss pulled me in his office. He said, my son said I need to go with you, and you tell me why, and da-da-da-da. Now, mind you, I'm battling two billion-dollar companies, two of them, right? Jostens, which is a billion-dollar company, and Tiffany's, which we all know. He says, you know what? My son talks highly about you. I'm going to give it to you. I'm like, holy shit. I can't believe this guy actually gave me a deal. He gave me the deal.
How long was the meeting?
20 minutes.
When you walk in, are there like models everywhere?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Don't give anything away proprietary.
No, but it's everything you can imagine and more.
Right. Okay. Say no more. Please proceed.
Yeah. So he gave me a shot, and when I tell you we almost didn't finish, we finished the last ring 20 minutes before tip-off. And 20 minutes before the
20
ring.
20 minutes.
20 minutes. We were sleeping at the factory. And when I look back, you know, I don't know how we pulled it off, and by God's graces, we did.
Yes.
But that was when I got into the championship ring business, that very year. I barely was able to finish. And can you imagine, on TNT, opening night ring ceremonies, never been done before. They have an announcement that said the jeweler couldn't finish the rings on time. That would have been disastrous.
Oh, my God.
Oof. I had to have one of those moments where I had to say, what is the worst thing that can happen?
Bro, to thank your father for putting that in your mind. That right there is something that is very difficult to recover from.
That was the most stress I've ever had in my entire career, was that week up until the ring program, because I didn't know if we could actually finish it.
So when you say it's 700 rings, right, you don't have to deliver all 700 championship ring night, but you do have to have the 20 rings?
You have to. It ended up being about almost 30 rings with the owners have to get their rings, the head coach, the coaching staff, and the players.
Okay. So
that was tough for me. Forget about the 700. That was tough for me. I was late on the other order, but they
gave you grace.
They gave me grace. I was late on the other because I couldn't do it. There's no way I could do it.
And so when you say that you were sleeping at the factory, this is the importance of having infrastructure and your infrastructure being in your backyard, because you can go check it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not being made somewhere else. Components may be made other places, but the assembly is here. That's very, that was to your benefit. My question to you is, why was it? What made it so arduous? What made it so difficult to do?
I was learning on the job. I literally was learning on the job, and I was learning on a major project. And so the way you manufacture championship rings is different than you making one-off custom pieces. It's a different type of mold. It's a metal mold versus a wax mold. I had to learn new methods of manufacturing when I was already so early on. I was only in business 7 years at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I had to learn new methods of manufacturing in order to accomplish what they wanted.
And so they give you an idea, or do you come to them like, if I'm designing a suit or a uniform for a multinational corporation, they have a guideline that they want me to follow. Do these teams know what they want? Specifically like the Lakers, because they won so many championships. It's not like the Sacramento Kings, who've never won ever. It's like they have they at that time they had what 14 rings.
Yeah.
So they knew what they wanted.
So I was very fortunate that I was dealing with the Lakers. Had it been any other team, I probably would have fell flat in my face and I wouldn't have been able to. But the Lakers had won so much. I think Dr. Buzz was kind of like, screw it. If he screws up, who cares? I already got so many championship rings, it doesn't matter. Right. That was to my benefit.
Right.
He was willing to take a risk because he's already won so many. If it was a team that was their first championship, they probably wouldn't have taken a risk on some 20-some-odd-year-old kid that's never done it before.
Wow. And so he gives you the opportunity. You make the rings. After you make the rings, then what other opportunities come after that? Because we already know you did the Golden State one, which was incredible. And we're going to get to that. But what other opportunity, what other doors opened up that you were like, oh, my God?
Well, I think that, you know, you go from being a mom and pop personal jeweler to more of a brand when you're able to do
instantly.
Like, it gave us instant credibility. And I think that that alone really catapulted my brand, my business, allowed me to scale up from a retail perspective, opening brick and mortar stores, things like that. Because, you know, when you have a big name, like a big franchise like the Lakers putting their stamp of approval and the NBA, it kind of gives you a certain level of perceived value, a certain cachet that you're not going to get otherwise. Correct. So I think I had that was a huge advantage, a huge boost for my business when I was able to do that because I was able to align myself with such big names. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that kind of cat, even with my professional athletes, they were like, oh, wow, this is the guy that does the rings for the Lakers. This is the guy that does. So I'm going to get
people
my
love that.
They love that. They yes. love that. So that helped a lot. That helped a lot.
But there were no specific companies that you were like, oh, my God. Like you know how I'm a married man, you're a married man. You're laying next to your wife having pillow talk. Like, was there any company or any entity that came along where you were like, can you believe this?
Absolutely. Forbes did an article on us where Forbes came and interviewed me because we were able to disrupt this industry where it was basically monopolized by two giants, billion-dollar giants. Exactly. And they're like, how did he do it? How did he do it? Well, I'm not that smart. I'm not that talented.
You don't give yourself enough credit. You don't just stumble into the office of Dr. Buss.
But I don't take no for an answer, and I build relationships one person at a time.
So that's the genius right there.
Yeah, I mean it's one of those most simple things in the world. There's no like secret sauce to that. You know, you just are very cognizant and aware that you treat people with respect. You attack every opportunity. You don't take no for an answer, and you don't get down on yourself.
Right. Now, knowing that, you know, jewelry is a very it's a highly coveted item. Mm-hmm. It is it's luxury. You know, there have been a rash of, like, you know, break-ins and people snatching stuff. I mean, like, how, like, when you're dealing with such high level gems, how do you protect yourself to just make sure? And you don't have to give anything proprietary away, but I'm just saying, I'm like, how do you like guard yourself from the foolishness that's out there?
I mean, I've definitely fallen victim to that. You know, I've been tied up. I've had guns pointed in my head. Wow. I've been pistol whipped. I've been like, you know, I've gone through that. So, you know.
All this in like at one time? Just over the years?
Over the years. I mean, I had one occasion where, you know, we had, you know, people dressed as FedEx workers come into my private showroom in my offices pretending to deliver a package only to come in with empty boxes and guns in hand. Tied up my employees, came to me, tied me up, pistol whipped me, made me open the safe, emptied me out, and fled. That's happened. It was an award show weekend, and we had, you know, a lot of people's jewelry, celebrities' jewelries that were getting cleaned in preparation for the weekend, new orders. I had to call all these people afterwards and say, guess what? Your jewelry's gone.
Yeah.
And it was tough. And that was a major blow because I was uninsured. I was wiped out completely.
Yes.
And I had to start from scratch. And that was one of those moments.
To your point earlier.
Yeah.
You build me down,
I had to build it back up. And that's why I have the confidence now to look you in the eye and tell you, if you take everything from me, if you clip all my wings,
I'm going to come back.
I'm coming back.
Right.
You can't stop me.
Right. But I had to fist bump you on that. That shit was hard. So, damn.
That's what I put. If you actually look here, I have IWNL over here.
There's I would not lose.
yeah, that was a Jay-Z song I would listen to when I was driving to work. And at the end of the song, he goes, I will not lose.
Absolutely.
And I look in my head, I would always repeat that as I'm walking into my office.
Wow. 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 So to lighten the mood past that, because that's wow. That's very real. In reference to your creativity, have you ever had a client? Well, actually, you know what? Not really ready to get past these rings just yet. Because the Golden State ring, I saw it and it moves what, counterclockwise? You can go back and you see the other championships. How did that come about? Like, is that something you thought about, or is that something that, like, you know, the guys thought about?
No, it was something I thought about. And, you know, how this whole, like, that's kind of what we're known for, right? Is to do these really intricate rings that do more than just being a shiny piece of jewelry. It tells a story. Mm-hmm. Well, in order to tell a story, you need pages. In order to have pages, you need space,
right?
So when we're building a ring, we want to be able to tell the story of the season, of the players, of the journey, and of the city.
Right.
Well, when you have something that's 30 millimeters by 30 millimeters, there's only so much story you can tell. So we have to create new real estate. And, you know, when we did the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Super Bowl rings.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
When we did the Lakers 2020 championship rings, we did this twist off top where it exposes whether it be the stadium, retired jerseys. So the Golden State Warriors situation was no different. We just created a new way to create real estate to tell a more robust and expansive story.
Wow. And are these rings like, I know you remember like the rings that like, you know, Mike Singletary and those guys used to win. They were much smaller.
Way smaller.
They were like class rings.
Yeah, 2009 rings that I did compared to this last Golden State Warriors ring. It's like literally three times the size.
So it's like the size of like a Kennedy silver dollar?
Bigger.
Or bigger than that?
Bigger than that.
Jesus Christ.
Humongous.
So it actually fits on your finger?
I mean, listen, it's not the most practical thing in the world, but you're not wearing it.
You're never wearing it.
Yeah, you're never wearing it.
Yeah, it's for the floss.
It's for the floss.
It's
exactly.
Definitely for the floss. So do you have, like, you know, you've worked with so many people and so many entities. Is there a dream client that you have? Like, is there somebody like, man, you know, I would really like to do something.
Man, you know, it's funny you say that. Like, I don't think I met my dream. I had my dream client so early on in my career.
With the Lakers?
No, it actually was Michael Jackson.
Delve deeper, please.
So my entire life, I growing up in the 80s and being...
Come on, man.
Michael Jackson, like, there is no bigger pop star. Like,
no bigger.
I was like the biggest fan. I had posters. Kids don't have posters anymore, but I had posters of Michael Jackson.
So did I.
Yeah, posters of Michael
Yellow
Jackson.
Yellow cardigan, white shirt. Yeah, yeah, I had it all. Continue.
I had all that. I was such a big Michael Jackson fan.
Yeah.
And when I got in this business, I was like, man, if one day I could just make a piece for Michael Jackson, I'd be so blessed. Well, I had the opportunity. I was referred. I went to the studio with a friend of mine, Big Chuck, and the producer, Just Blaze.
Yes.
Brought me into the studio.
With Michael Jackson?
And they were with Michael Jackson. And I was like, holy shit, I'm in the studio with Michael Jackson. This is crazy.
Did you know you were going to meet Michael?
No, I did not know.
So what was this, a birthday present for you?
I came to deliver jewelry to them, and they said, let me introduce you to Michael Jackson. It was a dream come true.
Oh, my God. So what does Michael say?
Michael says, oh, I'd like to get a piece made. Can you come to the house and I want to go over it with you?
And this is when he was in Homely?
He was in Neverland Ranch at the time.
So you drive up to Santa Barbara?
I drive to Santa Barbara.
Happily.
Oh, my God. So happy. He gives me a tour of the home himself.
Is it? Wait. Now, is it just you and him, or is it you and your assistant? Or
no,
like,
it's me.
Set the stage for us, Jason.
So me and my close friend, name is Charles Stanton, also known as Big Chuck, who's a music industry guy. He says, we're going to go up there together because he had a good relationship with him. introduced me to him when we were at the studio. We drove up there. We went to the Neverland Ranch. Michael gives us a tour on a golf cart of his property. I'm talking about, you have giraffes, you have elephants.
Everything. It's called Neverland Ranch. Bro, come on.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yes, it was amazing.
Dreams are made of.
Yes.
Totally regular guy, by the way. Like, you know, everyone thinks of Michael Jackson. You know, I was completely starstruck. Probably the only time I've ever been starstruck in my life. But this was somebody that was a dream come true, because I was a kid wanting to, wanting to do something for Michael Jackson. And he made he had a family crest. He wanted me to make his family crest in diamonds. So we went ahead and we made the crest in diamonds, and I put this like chain on it thinking he was going to wear it. And he's like, what is this? I thought you were going to wear it. He's like, no. I'm going to use this, and I need it to be nailed to the front door of each one of my kids' bedrooms and my bedroom. I made 10 of them, by the way.
Are you serious?
He's like, I want it as a door piece on the outside door. I'm like, are you serious? Only Michael Jackson has enough money to do that.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
You made 10?
10 of them.
You know what's funny? Because as you were telling the story, I'm like, I wonder if, like, did Michael get a chain? and the thing is, you automatically put it on a chain because you're just thinking, I mean, naturally, you want this on a chain. He's like, no.
Yeah.
No. I want you to put this on the door.
Yeah. And by the way, the nicest guy ever. Like, you would never think that he's a worldwide celebrity, like, biggest pop icon in the history of the world. Guy was, like, as normal as you can get.
See, you know what? Surprisingly, his voice is deeper than a lot of people realize.
True.
And the reason how I know this, prior to me becoming a designer, I worked at UTA William Morris, and also worked at this place called Amun-Ra Films, Wesley Snipes' film company. Mm-hmm. So Wesley was doing Blade, and Michael Jackson was surprisingly a big fan of Blade. So he would call up to the office when Wesley was doing not the last Blade, but the Blade before that. And he was like, you know, can I speak with Wesley Snipes? I'm like, may I tell him who's calling? Oh, yes, Michael. And I'm like, can you tell me your last name? Michael Jackson. And I mean, other people have the name Michael Jackson, but I'm like, I'm wondering in my mind, is this the Michael Jackson? So I like patched the call through to the guy I was working with, a guy named Victor Magali. And he's like, yeah, that was Michael Jackson. He wants to be in Blade. And I was like, what? And he would call so much because I guess Wesley already had it. He already had the film cast. But Michael was like, I'm Michael Jackson.
Yeah,
Make room for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, make room for me. Ultimately, it never happened. But in reference to meeting like your dream client or somebody that you've always wanted to work with, I had the opportunity a couple of weeks ago to meet Stevie Wonder.
Wow.
And I'm not going to tell you the wild goose chase that I went through with his team to just get to his studio, but when I met him, he was so normal, so present, but ultimately so genuine.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, you know, I was there, you know, this woman who does a lot of my production, the two of us were there, and like, you know, he's like, you know, he's working on his I forget what the thing is called, but it helps him because naturally he can't see. Mm-hmm. So he finds this the song he wants to play. He has a song called Mercy. He got one of these Mercy sets. He got like four of them,
mm-hmm.
made them custom. And he's like, I want you to hear this song. You know, I had this song and then somebody told me about your piece. And I was like, you know what? I just wanted you to hear this song. And, like, I'm sitting here in the studio, and this guy wrote all of these super, I mean, smashes. And I'm just, like, sitting here with him, and he's just so normal. And I think a lot of times we...
Limba Chicken Chow Mein, Mkhetwa, a.k.a. Big Warra.
Yo, it's Big Fred, a.k.a. Dati Tuzowadi Podcast.
Kiki Tubafetu, and we are the Sobering Podcast.
Tune in to us every second Wednesday for fire conversations and interviews about South African music, sneakers, and street culture.
Check us out on the Revolt Podcast Network.
Shout out to our moms.
Like, look at celebrities, and we think, like, it's no way they can be normal. But, like, bro, they're, like, they just want a Jamba Juice, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. It's so true how sometimes you'll meet the biggest celebrity in the world and they'll be so genuine, so normal, so humble. And then meanwhile, you sometimes meet a D-list celebrity and they're an absolute nightmare.
The biggest diva.
Yeah. I never understood that.
Yes.
It just kills me. And that, you know, and with both of us being in this business as long as we have, you could basically tell right away, like, oh, you're not lasting long.
Correct.
Because you're going to burn every bridge.
Correct. You know what's interesting? Jim Moore said the exact same thing about people that he's put on the cover of GQ magazine. He said, I got to a point where I could, by the middle of the shoot, I would know if this guy's going to be around. And I would also know if the guy or the gal would burn themselves out. So interesting, because we're in the people business.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I developed my style and knack for talking to people because there's a lot of dead time in between measuring somebody. So when you're measuring somebody, it's either you're going to talk or it's going to be super silent.
Mm-hmm.
So like during my time of measuring like a LeBron or measuring like a Kobe, measuring any of the guys that I've done stuff for, like me just having conversation with them, like they open up, because you'd be surprised. People who have accomplished a lot, when you ask them a question about how they got there, they will easily open up.
Mm-hmm,
if you're
mm-hmm.
asking for something like, you know, I need some money, like naturally they're like, no.
Yeah.
But if you're like, can you give me jewels on XYZ? They open right up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So interesting. That being said, in reference to your footprint, you started in, did you start downtown or did you start in Beverly Hills?
I started in my apartment. downtown. I started okay. in my apartment
yeah.
with an IKEA bed.
Yes, yes. Hey, yo, talk the story. Hey,
I started in my apartment. I didn't move out of my apartment until I had enough clientele to be able to open an office, because in my head, I said, when I started my business, I said, I want to be in the epicenter of luxury. And the epicenter of luxury in LA, because I know location, location, location was always taught.
Correct.
Is Beverly Hills.
Right.
So I went and I looked, what is the cheapest office you could possibly find in Beverly Hills? And I found it.
And you found the Regent?
I found the, no. That's my store. My offices, I don't think you've been in my offices are at the, on the corner of Beverly and Wilshire.
Okay.
So I found a small office. It was 180 square feet
mm-hmm.
on the third floor of this building.
Oh, wow.
And I'm still in that same building, by the way, but mm-hmm. of course, a different floor and bigger.
Correct. Bossed up, bro.
Yeah. So went over there. I found that and I said, this is where I'm going to go. And I had an office. And to be quite honest with you, at that time in my career, I was visiting everyone. It's not like they're coming to me. Like,
right.
You know, I had to go to them.
Correct. Bro, so I know that story.
Yeah. So I didn't. And then it wasn't until 2010 that I started actually building stores and having people come wow. because I knew, I felt by that time I was 10 years in the game.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
I had enough of a brand name that I knew that I needed to scale my business so that it wasn't Jason selling you the jewelry. It was Jason of Beverly Hills selling you the jewelry.
Right.
Meaning the brand itself can carry its own weight. So at that time is when I started opening stores, because I knew that I wanted to get to a point where it was every single client, although I'd love to know every single client, there's only one Jason and there's only 24 hours in a day, and I'm not going to be able to get to everyone.
Correct.
So I have to
Correct.
Be able to build that brand experience with everyone, which is why, you know, all of my branding has a red stripe on it, because it goes back to the roots of my brand, the red carpet. I made jewelry for people to walk on the red carpet. That was
That's
my
right.
Super Bowl. That
wow.
was my NBA Finals, to watch my right. jewelry on the red carpet, whether it was an athlete, an actress, a musician, walking the red carpet. That was my showcase.
Wow.
So I have a red carpet in every one of my stores. I have a red carpet on all my branding, on all my packaging, because I wanted
wow.
to deliver that same red carpet celebrity experience to each and every client that comes into one of our stores. Even if they're not getting that personal attention from me, they're feeling the same way that Anthony Mason or Michael Jackson felt when I was dealing with them.
That's amazing. So there are a couple of other questions I want to rifle through in the segment that I do. But one question I have for you is in reference to the expansion of your business, was it self-funded, or did you, you know, have a financial model made where you could project out, and then you took that to a VC or you took it to friends and family. How did you like get over that hump of just like, okay, now I'm doing stuff for everybody. Now it's time to open stores. That's easier said than done. How did you do that?
It was 100% self-funded, balls to the wall, taking a risk when a lot of people otherwise would not have done it. When I was built the first 10 years, I basically was doing exactly what you said earlier in this conversation. I was investing in the business.
Mm-hmm.
I was building my inventory. I tried to build a pillow soft enough that if I fell, I wouldn't break my back. Exactly.
Right.
So when I got to that point is when I knew it was the time to take risk. And I always tell like young entrepreneurs, right? Like if you're going to take risk when you have the least to lose, when you're young. You don't have wife. You don't have children. You don't have anything. This is the time to never be scared.
Right.
Risk it all.
Correct.
Because you don't have to worry about the worst case scenario is not that bad.
Word. Because it's just, I tell people all the time, when I initially started, it was just me. So I could work 25 hours a day, 8 days a week, 366 days a year. I could do that.
Yeah.
But time is not your own when you take on a mate, when you merge two lives together.
Absolutely.
And then you bring a little life and then another little life.
Yeah.
And then those kids start to grow, like, and then you got to get a house and
you have added responsibilities.
So you pretty much were just like, I'm going to do this right now. It has to happen right now.
Yep.
You put a self-imposed window on yourself?
I did. I knew I had to take a chance. And like, listen, even now you got to take chances in order to accomplish anything, you got to take chances. And sometimes you take chances and they work out and sometimes they don't. Mm-hmm. But like I don't want to ever stop taking chances. I just won't take as big of a chance as I did when I didn't have wife and kids.
Correct, correct. So segment time, my brother. Three questions. Advice you would tell a young professional?
A young professional. I would say a couple things, right? Is what I touched on earlier is to never give up hope. Never take no for an answer and keep pushing. And just making sure you give everyone the equal amount of respect. And I think that like it's something so simple, but something so simple, but it's done wonders for me. And it's like there's no like secret formula. There's no like secret strategy that only the worthy know about. No, it's just simple shit. Like
right.
Keep your word. Be good to people and work hard. That's it.
You know what's interesting? And I'm going to pause the questions for 1 second. I got two more. There's a podcast called Kosher Money.
Mm-hmm.
This Jewish guy talks about he talks to all of these different people who are in the business of making money, making you friendly with money. Because a lot of times, a lot of people want money, and making money is not necessarily the hard thing. It's keeping it, making sure you invest it properly. All the people that he talks to, they all say the same thing. It's no magic bullet. And my mother used to always say, so did my father, you're going to pay no matter what. You're either going to pay in the beginning, the middle, or the end, but you're going to pay. So what you're saying, it just really strikes a chord because it's like, this isn't rocket science. When you meet people, treat them with respect, whether it's somebody cleaning your office or somebody you're ultimately going to get married to. Just treat them with respect and you'll be surprised how things will open up for you. Next question. What would you share with your younger self?
That's a good one because I don't ever want to look back, right? If I did this or what if I did that? I would have been in so much better because everything happens for a reason. I got robbed for a reason. I lost money for a reason.
Oh.
But I would say, tell my younger self that it's okay to say no.
Wow.
Because every time you say yes, you're saying no to something else.
Correct.
Like I said, time is something you cannot buy. Doesn't matter how much money you have. But when I was younger, I would say yes to everything. Everything that I saw as an opportunity. I was like, oh, that's an opportunity. Yes. Yes, yes. Or even a customer, right? Oh, I don't have the money. Can I pay you later? Yes.
You serious?
Yes. I was afraid of disappointing people. I was overly ambitious where I would say yes to opportunities that would clog up my day and not allow me to do my core competencies, my core business that would take me away from it. I wanted to attack every opportunity. I wanted to not let anyone down. I never wanted anyone to be upset at me. So I kept saying yes and yes and yes and yes. And every time I said yes, I'm saying no to either another opportunity. I'm saying no to progression. I'm saying no to success, because that's what ultimate. I look back, my biggest mistakes were the yeses I said, not the no's I said.
Wow. I recall we had a conversation about a former client in the MC game. You were just like, bro, this dude, I'm going to protect protect the name to protect the innocent. But like, I remember that era of you. You were just like, I'm focused on getting to the next level. In terms of your level up, what set of circumstances happened to make you say, you know what? No. Let me cut all this extra stuff and just sit right here with the meal.
Well, you know, when you take that macro level view of your business, like I said, that's so important. That 5-year program, take a step back. And I looked and I said, you know what? And this is true for many businesses, I'm sure for yourself as well. When you realize, in my business, I realized quickly that 90% of my business was done with only 5% of my clients.
Wow. Yeah.
Right? So like everything else is just occupying space.
Yeah.
And occupying time. And I don't have the luxury of buying more time. So I realize that, you know, when you're dealing with a client that's a headache, that is doesn't pay you, that is a difficult person to deal with, like I was like, I'm just getting rid of those situations.
All the way.
I'm just getting rid of it.
Yes.
My time is worth a lot. I've worked hard to perfect my craft. My clients have to pay for that because I paid for it with my time.
You better believe you paid for it.
Yeah. So like when you're charging for your product and I'm charging for my product, sometimes people say, well, you know, oh, well, it's expensive. It's this, it's that. Well, you know,
that's what it is.
You're getting a lot. You're not just getting some newbie that just started. Like the product speaks for itself, because I can tell you the difference pretty much immediately between what I provide and what other people provide and our services and other people's services.
You touch on so many points, man. Recently, I had the opportunity to dress Aldis Hodge for Black Adam.
Saw that.
And the way he shouted me out, because I made some stuff for the film, but also made some stuff for him for two premieres he did. One was in the UK and one was in New York. The way he embraced me on the red carpet during his moment, my wife saw that and she was like, that's your friend. She said, you know, all of these industry people who, you know, you help, and when you call on them, they're like, you know, because I have this thing, Jason, I always feel like some people that you help and we'll go balls to the wall for, sometimes when you ask them for things, it's not so easily reciprocated. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you've dealt with situations like that.
Absolutely.
She said, this gentleman right here is your friend. And the reason why I know he's your friend, because here he is starring in this gigantic blockbuster movie, and he took a moment to shout you out. So the reason why I brought that up is because I, too, had a reckoning of my time. My peace of mind is so more valuable. So people who will bring $1 million to your bottom line but bring you $12 million worth of stress, it's not worth it.
Absolutely.
Which leads me to my final question of the afternoon. How do you find and keep peace of mind?
As I've gotten older, that answer changes as I've gotten older.
I know it has.
Right. For me, I do have to have that occasional escape to get away so I can refocus.
Correct.
Time with my family is very, very important. Very important. It's something that I didn't prioritize enough early on in my career.
Yes.
You suffer the consequences of that.
Yes, you do.
You know, whether it be with your wife or your children. I was lucky enough and fortunate enough that I just barely skated by.
Wow.
Right?
Like, How so when you say skated by?
Meaning that like the first 10, 12 years of my relationship with my children and my wife, I have stores in Japan. I'm traveling constantly.
Yeah.
Stores on the East Coast. I wasn't around. I wasn't doing that. And, you know, you start to lose grip of your relationship because you're not around.
Correct.
You lose that tie with your children because you're not around.
Correct.
I missed both my children's first steps, which to this day I kind of regret.
Wow.
And, you know, and then we had the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of like for me.
Level set.
That was like, yeah. That was like, I'm at home now.
Yeah.
Like dad's at home.
Yep.
I'm present with my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like it made me really appreciate what it is that I have at home as well. And right. I think that, you know, even prior to that, I kind of noticed that I needed to do that shift because, you know, I always tell my salespeople, right? If you're happy, you'll be a better salesperson.
Correct.
You'll sell more in 6 hours than you would in 24 hours if you're unhappy. You'll sell more in 6 hours happy than 24 hours unhappy.
Right.
And so, like, I need to have that good energy for my family, for my wife, for my kids, knowing that when I walk out that door, they're fighting. They're like, cheering me on, that we're all on the same team, that they identify well with me. Like, so, and I'm a way better business person that way.
That's awesome. And your wife is integral to your business, correct?
So after the pandemic, she actually came on and just helps with like the VIP. There was never a female element to my business. Hmm. And so she came right after the pandemic. She started coming and kind of and dealing with a lot of our clients, dealing with their wives, and added a new element to the business, which I thought was great. And then more importantly, it gave us the opportunity to just be together.
Yeah. And were you apprehensive?
Absolutely.
At first?
Shit, I didn't want it to happen. I liked keeping business and family
the boys
separate.
Club.
Yeah, boys club. I keep business and family separate. I grew up that way. That's what I identified as the right way to have a relationship.
Yeah.
And then I think that, you know, it gave her a certain level of appreciation for how hard I work. And then at the same time, it gave me appreciation for what she was able to contribute to the business as well.
Wow. 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 Well, that closes it. I want to thank you, Jason, for taking time out of your afternoon to come and just share just life experiences and also, you know, just game about business. I always say that, you know, it's so important to know the business of your business, because if you don't know the business of your business, you won't be in it long.
This is true.
You won't be in it long. And you've been in it 20 years strong.
I'm trying.
No. It's no such word as trying. It's either you're doing or you aren't. But either way, I appreciate you very much. This is War Air Boswell, and this is The Measurables. Thank you.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
Hey there. Ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah. Or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again, because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front row. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.